So if last week we introduced the introduction, we read the psicha of this Shmona Prakim. Shmona Prakim itself is an introduction to Pirkei Avos. Now we begin the first of the eight chapters of the introduction. First of the eight chapters that prepare us for the work of learning Tikkun HaMidos that's going to go step by step throughout Pirkei Avos. And he opens by talking about anatomy, spiritual anatomy or moral anatomy. Daki nefesh ha'adam nefesh achas. The first parak opens a axiomatic statement that the human soul is a single soul. La pu'ulos rabos chalukos. It may have many different modalities, many different tools, different things it can accomplish, but there's a single human soul. We might refer to different souls. We might use the term loosely. But he's going to ultimately, the second half of the parak is going to be devoted to identifying the five different aspects, the five different sets of jobs and activities that the soul might engage in. Sometimes it might refer to as multiple souls. You might misunderstand and think that a human has many different souls. We're going to see a soul for sensing and a soul for thinking and so on and so forth. As many doctors believe, Rambam is writing this 900 years ago, to the extent that the head of the doctors, I'm not sure whether it's a reference to Galen or to Hippocrates, Shayla points out in the footnote that the Rambam actually wrote among his medical writings in Arabic was a commentary on Hippocrates. Rambam was definitely familiar with the ancient medical literature. So Rosh HaRofim writes, Nefesh Shalosh, Tivis, Chiyunis, Nafshis, that human possesses three souls. What we would more or less refer to as a plant soul, an animal soul, and a human soul. Sort of like the most primitive parts of what we would think of the most primitive parts of the brain, and then more advanced, and then those parts which are unique to humans. We might talk about different powers, we might talk about kochos or chalakim, parts of the nefesh, actually yeyamer, chelke nefesh, different parts of one soul. V'zeh Hashem yishtam shibra philosophim harbet. Philosophers will talk about different parts of the soul. Ina miskavrinim ba'armam chelke, understand though, Rambam writes, we're not talking about different items, we're not talking about like a physical item that can be cut into pieces. What they mean is different modalities, different abilities. Each person is a person's soul, each person's mind, is a blend, a bundle of different abilities. Monim pu'uloseha chalukos, they're looking at the separate, disparate abilities that the neshama has, that the nefesh has, as though they were chalakim makol ha-mechubim chalakim hem, as though they were parts of a whole item. Why is this so critically important to talk about the fact that we have a single soul? Why is it so important to talk about the structure of the soul? The Rambam says you got to understand that soul anatomy is where we're going to start. I tell you, Adesh, Tikkun HaMidos, Amnam Hi Ripo HaNefesh B'Kochosel. If Pirkei Avos is all about Tikkun HaMidos, it's all about improving one's character, improving one's personality, that what there really is healing the soul. And that's the language Rambam uses in Mishnah Torah as well, particularly in the opening prakim of Hilchos Deos, when he talks about improving and enhancing one's midos towards the divine model. It talks about it, healing the soul. That a Musar expert who's going to work with you on developing a midah is a doctor of the soul. Long before the medical community thought of psychiatry as part of medicine, Ram was talking in those terms. And he says, well, if we're going to look at this as a sort of metaphysical medicine or moral medicine, Kamo sharofi asher yirapei agufos, to study to become a doctor, you need to begin with anatomy. You need to know what the body contains. What are the different parts? Ritzoni lomar gufa adam. You have to understand the human body if you want to become a doctor. And then we can talk about elu dvar michaluhu v'yuchakmem, elu dvar mi'avri'uhu v'yuchuvanayim. Once you understand anatomy, then we can talk about positive and negative impacts of the environment on different parts of the body. It's going to be the same here. Kena she yirapea nefesh v'yutzela sakein amidos. If I want to help to heal, to cure, to improve my own nefesh, to fix my own midos, or to help others with their midos, you need to have a good sense of soul anatomy. Then you can begin to recognize what's unhealthy for the soul and what's healthy for the soul, and how can I move my nefesh forward. So to engage in the work of Maseches Avos, to engage the work of Tikkun HaMidos, before we can deal with physiology and epidemiology, we need to begin with anatomy. We need to come to know what's going on inside of us. It says it's going to begin with what I suppose we might call epistemology. Let's understand the parts of our mind, the parts of our nefesh.
Can I ask a question? Sure. For you, brother? Maybe you can get to this when he goes through the five things, but I was trying to figure out to what extent the Rambam would stick to this, if maybe there's no way to know, if he were here today. Meaning, we don't usually think about some of the things that he calls the different parts of the nefesh. We wouldn't call them part of the soul. I wouldn't think anybody today would say, well, your power of digestion and your lymph system and stuff like that are part of your soul. Let's say they're part of your body.
Yeah, so let's see how things unfold. Let's see how things unfold. He's going to, with this preface, appreciating that why it's important to sort of have this self-knowledge and to spend this time contemplating what goes on inside my mind and my heart, and to understand that there's hopefully a certain wholeness to all the different parts of me. So it's a coherent identity that all these different parts of me, all these different powers that I have, relate to. So he's going to engage now in two different things. The second one is, as I mentioned before, he's going to end with enumerating the different parts of the, or different parts of different powers, different abilities of the nefesh. The first thing he wants to talk about is to appreciate the uniqueness of the human soul. So I down to that parak. If you want to follow along, we're at the top of page Resh Chav Tes. Shedvareinu einam ela b'nefesh adam. You have to understand that we are talking about the human soul. And he says, understand that there may be apparent overlap with animal souls. Kol hamazon adar hamashal. For instance, the way our bodies absorb nutrition, it's not the same as the what he calls the power of nutrition for a horse, for a donkey. And let's read what he has to say, and then let's process why this is important. Let's process the point Seth, that you're making, or like, well, in what sense is this nefesh? It's true that we eat and horses eat, and physiologically speaking, the stomachs look pretty similar, the circulatory systems look pretty similar. And yet he says, but man is deriving energy and deriving nutrition using the nutritive part of the human soul, while the donkey is getting it out of the donkey soul. And the Dekel, these are Mechel Kazan Menefesh Shalom, it's fascinating. It says the palm tree is drawing nutrition through the Chel Kazan of the Nefesh of the palm tree. That's really pretty striking. Trees have souls. I mean, there were pagan Ovdei Avodah Zarah who believed that there were spirits, tree spirits, and the Norse believed in free spirits that they would worship. That's obviously something we thoroughly reject. And that's not what we mean here anyways. But trees have a neshama. Trees have a nefesh. That's really, seems very strange. So he says, look, the human and the donkey and the palm tree all are derived nutrition through their type of nefesh. All these items, ishim doesn't mean people, ishim means items, all these specimens, you'll say it's nizon, it's deriving nutrition, b'shit of Hashem b'lvad, that's just, you're using a common word, but really, but losha inyan echad eino, it's never the same thing. Chen yamer isha adam b'alachayim margish. We might talk about a human being having feelings, feeling the sense of sensing, and an animal sensing. I see and it sees. I smell and it smells. But he says, yeah, shituf Hashem b'levad, that's a shared terminology, but the hargasha asher b'ruvin is not the same as hargasha asher b'zeasos. The sense knowledge in Reuven and in Reuven's horse are not at all the same. Every species has its own nefesh. Each nefesh can do different behaviors. What does this mean? He gives one mashal, and then let's seek to understand. It seems like this. It's
hard. Is nefesh another word for biological makeup?
Yeah, so I think what nefesh, I think you're driving something important. The nefesh means, nefesh definitely includes, so well, one of the mysteries, and we have a biologist, Baruch Hashem, here. One of the things that's certainly at least left deliciously vague in a sort of introductory bio course, there'll be a definition of life as sort of perform, we'll define life as performing particular functions. An item is alive if it digests, if it excretes, if there's some sort of locomotion, right? If and there's some sort of, some manner or another reproduction. The question is, but and it should be noted that when the Rambam is going to soon enumerate the five different parts of the nefesh, the first one, the chelek hazan, sounds an awful lot like that list. Which sounds like, at its most basic, it's life. Because biologists may list what are the features that indicate life. That is, the fact that there's digestion going on, and there's reproduction going on, and there's excretion going on, so those are indicators that there is life. But presumably life isn't just the aggregate of digesting and reproducing and so on and so forth. Right? Those are indicators that there's life. But the life, it's, life is something, what is the life? So it's not something that can be directly observed. So that's this metaphysical nefesh, I believe, that he's talking about. And what he's saying is, it's true that the tree is alive, and the donkey is alive, and I, human, am alive. And we do share certain qualities. We do share certain key activities or key functions. So he says, look, every nefesh, maybe that's the best word for pulos, every nefesh has multiple functions, but it's a single nefesh. So it's not, and I think these two ideas go together. It's not as though I have a digestive nefesh, and I have intellectual nefesh, such that digestion, you know, I have the same digestive nefesh as the tree, or perhaps as the some other mammal, the donkey. Isn't it? There's a single nefesh. I'm alive. I have life. A metaphysical reality that expresses itself through a host of biochemical manifestations. Everything is going on in my body, the circulation, circulation and digestion and the cellular function, all of that are expressions of the nefesh. All that are expressions of the life within me. I'm alive, and the donkey's alive, and the tree is alive, but those are different types of life. There's human life, and there's donkey life, and the tree life. There may be certain overlap in terms of functions. We all digest, and the donkey and I both locomote, we both move around, to find food, to avoid predators, and so on and so forth. But my life and the donkey's life are fundamentally different. I think that's the first major. There's the first major set of points he's trying to make. I think number one, as you said, what emerges from this parak is that nefesh means life, and life expresses itself in different ways. It can be different functions, but there's two sort of parallel ideas that he's making, or complementary ideas that he's arguing for. Number one, that in any given organism, there's a single life which has multiple expressions, multiple functions, but there's one core life. And I think that relates to the fact, as a logical corollary, to the fact that once it is a single life, as opposed to saying sort of there's like there's digestion, this and that, once you recognize there's a single life that an organism has, which expresses itself in multiple functions, then you realize that although I share many functions with other species, we fundamentally have this different life, even when we're both digesting. Even when we're both moving, my movement is an expression of a uniquely human nefesh, uniquely human type of life force. The donkey might be the mechanics of the donkey walking, and perhaps the biochemistry of the donkey walking are very similar. Our physical physiology, our physical anatomy are very similar, but the life that drives it are the human life and the donkey life, fundamentally distinct. So that really sort of gets you thinking about life, and he's going to begin to look at uniquely human life as, you know, both having sort of what we would call more primitive functions, as well as that are shared broadly with the animal kingdom, maybe even beyond the animal kingdom, as well as the other functions that we see as more advanced, which are unique to humans. And he's going to get to that. But even before we jump into those details, I think there's a larger point worth noticing here also. Because in this first major concept that he's driving home, that there's human life and there's donkey life, and although, you know, biochemically we're going, the methodology of the nutrition extraction, the methodology of excretion are the same, but the life are fundamentally different. This is a very important moral point that he's driving at. There's I eat and the donkey eats, and they may be mechanically very similar, but they're fundamentally, metaphysically, morally, totally distinct. I could choose to eat like a donkey, but fundamentally humans don't eat like donkeys. I mean, the esophagus may work the same way. The tongue may work the same way. The physical aspects of it are the same, but the metaphysics of the life that drives it, fundamentally different. That's why the Jewish approach to how we relate to the physical parts of our lives and from a religious perspective is so philosophically appealing. In other words, let me break that down. Well, one of the, as Rambam reminds us in multiple places, the Rambam particularly in the beginning of the third parak of Hilchos Deos, it talks about the difference between a Jewish approach to physicality versus a Christian or Muslim approach to physicality, that we don't see the physical as fundamentally bad. Or put differently, we don't think that the ascetic is the ultimate in spirituality. The Rambam is very clear about that. Not like other religions where the holiest people are the ones who try to disconnect from physical living as much as possible. Unlike other religions that believe that self-deprivation is the tool to fundamentally the same as spirituality, and that the more self-deprivation, the more spiritual, more holy. So we reject that utterly. He says, there is value. The Torah has plenty. Obviously, there's a lot of self-control and self-discipline, tremendous amounts of self-control, self-discipline. That's very much a part of halacha. Self-discipline is incredibly important, but we don't see physicality as fundamentally bad. We see unfettered physicality as a tremendous abuse of an extreme distortion of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu would like us to engage the physical material world. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us neither to just sort of engage it in a totally unfettered way, nor to totally step back. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to engage it in a thoughtful, deliberate way. That's an idea we're going to be seeing more of as we progress, even over the course of this parak and beyond in Shmona Prakim, that Rosh Hashanah is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is seeking is that we be in the driver's seat, controlling, thinking deliberately about how we're engaged in the physical world, as opposed to our appetites dominating us. Who's in the driver's seat? It's not that we're trying to throw our appetites away or kill them. But we're trying to develop the ability to be able to dial them up and dial them down, to have them on a switch. We're going to see, even if this parak progresses, Rav Shailat points in his notes here, points to a gorgeous line in Yesod HaTorah, Perek Zayin Halacha Aleph, talks about sort of the apex of human development, where a person has brought himself to the level of becoming a Navi. It says, Ein Yitzro, it says Yesod HaTorah Zayin Aleph, Ein Yitzro Miskaber Allah V'Darab Olam. My Yetzer is not overpowering me. My desires don't overpower me. But the alternative is not, I've killed my desires. The alternative, the ideal is, Hu Misgaber Bidaito Al Yotzro Tamin. Al Yotzro Tamin. With my das, with my knowledge, understanding, and we'll see more as we begin to unpack the different parts of the Nefesh, my Das is empowered over my Yetzer. Not that my Yetzer is gone, but my Yetzer is being used. I'm deploying it in a deliberate way, rather than sort of just it being in charge of me. So that notion, which is, I think discussed in a couple different contexts in the past, and is arguably one of the most fundamental differences philosophically between Judaism and Christianity, certainly in terms of, not theologically, not obviously they accept Yashkin, we see that as what is our, but in terms of philosophy of life, in terms of practical philosophy, it's arguably the most fundamental distinction. It goes back to how you read the story of the Eitz Hadas, and the Christian rereading of Eitz Hadas is in line with this. Milton and C.S. Lewis are riddled with this mistaken philosophy. It's cognate and it's logically flows from the Avodah Zarah theology of Christianity. And there's a notion that which C.S. Lewis, both C.S. Lewis and Milton talk about extensively, the Christian notion, which we reject as utter Avodah Zarah, the Christian notion that Satan is in the basement and he's sort of, this semi-autonomous being that's fighting against God. We see that as utter Avodah Zarah. That's Zoroastrian thinking, just with a updated to Christian terminology. But that's a good God and a bad God. That's what Yeshayahu addresses and rejects in the line that's paraphrased. We paraphrase every morning beginning of the Birkas Kriya Shema Shachas. Ayotzar Baruch Hoshech Osa Shalom Uborei Ra. Kadosh Baruch was the one who made it all. We utterly reject the notion that there's a good God and a bad God. So the Christian formulation of that, Rabbi Ramchal been learning weekly at Yeshiva in the afternoons, Das Ramchal's Das Funos, a fascinating exploration of a number of Emunah issues. So he talks about, presents all these two pagan ideas, the Zoroastrian form and the Christian form. The Zoroastrian form, you have this sort of two parallel God, the good God and the bad God sort of in parallel. And then you have sort of the stacked version, where you have sort of the God and then sort of like the demigod who's working for or fighting against. We reject both of those as utter Avodah Zarah, a lack of Yichud HaBorei. But again, it's not just a question of theology. Theology is very important. Emunah is a fundamental mitzvah. Avodah Zarah is a Hargav HaYavar. Theology itself is obviously of immense, immense, immense importance. But aside from the sort of the theology, the question of how you understand or misunderstand Kadosh Baruch Hu, there's a practical philosophical piece of like, how does that impact the way you look at life and the way you process how you're interacting with your environment? And this Christian notion that physicality is fundamentally bad, and really the ideal would be total retraction from the physical environment. So we reject that. We say, hafuch, Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to engage in the material world, but not just to, that's not just license to do whatever you want because God wants us to engage in the material world. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be incredibly discerning and live lives of self-discipline and self-control in the way in which we engage thoughtfully, deliberately, in with the material environment around us. But the notion that I could do gashmius right, that my eating has the potential to be radically different in very fundamental ways from an animal's eating. The donkey's eating, there's nothing holy or unholy about it. It just is. My eating lends itself to incredible kedusha and to incredible tumah. You think about my sexual activity. Human being sexual activity lends itself to extraordinary kedusha or extraordinary tumah. Those very fundamental appetites and very fundamental thing about the life, so there's core life functions. Digestion and reproduction are two of them. There's something that's very basic to all of life, certainly to all of the animal kingdom. But yet they're although the physical, biological, the methodology, how our body does them, the mechanics of them are very similar to that of the rest of the animal kingdom. The life that drives them is entirely distinct, which is why ours lends itself to extraordinary kedusha or tumah. Now you think about there are more yisurei karis. The vast majority of the yisurei karis are yisurei bia and yisurei achila. At the same time, you look at the Rambam Sefer Kedusha. Of the 14 svarim, one of them is called the Book of Holiness. Now what would you imagine you would find inside the Book of Holiness? If you didn't know, you'd say, oh, Rambam wrote a Sefer Kedusha. What do you expect to find in Sefer Kedusha? Rambam wrote a Sefer Kinyan. That's about ownership and acquisition. It talks about certain types of property. It talks about how you acquire property. Okay, no great surprises there.
You'd probably guess it was about Korbanos.
Right, the Book of Holiness. Korbanos, Shekhinah, Nevuah, maybe Davening, Tefillin, Sefer Torah. Right? Where do you open up a Sefer Kedusha? It's all about halachas of eating and halachas of bia. That's the entirety of Sefer Kedusha. Right? Machal Sasuris, Shechita, and the Isurei Bia. Now, it might strike us as strange. If it strikes us as strange, that means we need to reorient our thinking. As a matter of fact, something someone showed me earlier, Chorsky pointed out that at the very beginning of Mishnah Torah, he gives you these one-sentence explanations of what's going to be in each Sefer. And he points out, Rambam points out, these are keys to Kedusha. To engage these fundamental physical appetites in holy ways, among the greatest keys to holiness. It can be done incredibly well or incredibly poorly. They're not fundamentally good or bad. It's a question of how we engage. So that I think that notion, which is so important and so basic to so much as a practical philosophy, it's the way we think about life and the attitudes that we have, I suspect that he doesn't tip his hat here, but I suspect that's what Rambam is driving at. That's why this is significant. Why is it so significant to make this point at great length that the human nefesh is fundamentally different from the donkey nefesh? And you should know that the fact that we eat and the fact that we think and the fact that we care, those are all parts of a single nefesh. Why is it also important? I think this is why. Because those two ideas together allow me to understand that when I eat, it's not the same. My eating and my thinking and my feeling are all part of the same life, which I therefore obviously is not the same as donkey life. So even my eating, even my quote-unquote primitive activities are driven by uniquely human life and therefore have uniquely human potential for kedusha, for moral substance. That's very, very important. Okay, now let's turn to the second half of this opening parak. Let's look at the different functions, the different parts, which anyway, he told us he can use the terminology of parts of the soul, parts of life, but he doesn't really mean parts as in pieces. He just means different functions of our life force. Ashuv al kavana seinu bechelkei nefesh. Let me now go back to the key topic here in this parak, the different chelkei nefesh. I got into an important side point about sort of the distinction between the human nefesh and the animal nefesh. Now let's talk about the different functions, different parts of the nefesh. I don't know if we'll have a chance to take a look at all of them tonight, but let's at least get started. Chelak Hazan. Number one, if you don't have to think over the course of the next 10 minutes, we should be able to see this in total. The first one is Kocha Moshecha Machzika Ma'akel Dochemo Saros, etc., etc., growth, digestion, excretion, reproduction, and so on and so forth. The basic biological functions. The functions are taking place largely within the body itself. Some of them do have to do with interacting with the environment. These are basic life functions. Like we talked about before, this is what you expect to find in, you know, chapter 1 or 2 of the bio textbook. These are basic life functions that are shared with other members of the animal kingdom. In many ways, many cases are shared with plants as well. Plants and bacteria also need to absorb, digest food and excrete and reproduce and so forth. And he says that to get into detail about how these work and why they work and in what organs and so on, all that's really more the precinct of medicine than of spiritual psychology. It's important. Rambam says, you know, I've written other books about this, but that's medicine. That's not really so relevant to a Pirkei Avos conversation. And that, again, as I said before, as you really pointed out before, that really sort of gives us a sense that we're talking about is life force. And the most basic level, the life force of any living thing, is still going to have a chel kazan. It's going to power these basic functions. Yeah?
Yeah, so looking at this, I wonder if it's the biological function of digestion or the God-given instinct that we have to know without having sat in a classroom, okay, this is how you chew.
This is how you put something in your mouth.
In other words, God has given to humans and to animals and to plants the ability to absorb nutrients and to want to absorb nutrients even without internally providing the instinct to wanting, and maybe it's wrong.
Yeah, although I think we're talking about desire, that's probably more part...
Next one?
Part four. So let's see where we go. Let's sort of see, and then we'll maybe put the piece into place more. The second of the five is the chelak hamargish. Now, he doesn't mean feeling as in emotional feelings. He means feelings. He really means sensory. The sensory aspect of, it's sort of like the basic biological aspect of our lives, of our nefesh. And then the second one is sensory aspect. He says, so what are the five senses? Kochos hachamisha. The five senses that we know, sight, hearing, taste, smell, and touch. And he makes the point... the entire surface of the body. He didn't really think of skin as an organ, but he says, unlike the others that are localized in a particular organ, this is sort of your entire surface area allows for tactile. Okay, so the first one is sort of the basic biological functions. The second one is sensory perception. And then he points out, interestingly, the third one is called chelak hamadame, which sounds like imagination. Now he pulls together a couple of different pieces here. He starts talking that we would have sort of started a discussion of imagination with imagination, making stuff up. So he looks at it as sensory memory. How do you have those remnants, those memories of sensory input? I'm touching something hot. Right now I feel that's hot. That's a level 2 reality. And that's sensory. I'm looking at you. I'm looking at your Ekru shirt. So right now that's sensory. That's level 2. If I look away, I might still remember. I look away, I might still remember that Jake's wearing a red jacket. Now it's not a question of sensory. Now it's a question of remembering it. Because my eyes are no longer seeing it. Now my eyes are focused elsewhere. So that's already chelak hamadama. That's imagination. That's fascinating. He's grappling. He's trying to, as he tells us, he's trying to solve a basic epistemological problem. He sees that imagination and memory as being very intertwined. He says, you're remembering sort of the sensory input of the past. You're no longer sensing it. But there are remnants, or your mind remembers bits and pieces, and you can put them together. He says, once you put them together, you can put them together in accurate ways or in inaccurate ways. Lefikach yakiv zeh hakoach min advar mishar hisigam, dvar mishal hisigam kal. Your imaginative faculty, faculty is a word that was often used in the past for these, this notion of the different parts of the nefesh. Your imaginative faculty can take pieces that you had, elements that you had sensed, you had seen something, you had smelled something, and put them together in entirely fantastic ways. Yeshel Hasigam. And he says, what's his first example of something, not that you haven't seen, but couldn't possibly see? The Sfinas Barzel Rotza Ba'avir, a metal ship flying in the air, running in the air. Absurdity. It was at the time. Right? Certainly, if the Rambam was thinking about it, which he obviously did because he wrote about it, that was imagination. He had never seen that, but what he's saying is imagination is built on sensory memory. I've seen boats, I've seen metal, I've seen air, I've seen things flying in the air, I've seen things running on the ground. So imagination isn't yesh me'ayin. I'm taking bits and pieces of things I've seen and then I'm sort of recombining them in very creative ways. So the combination is doesn't exist. But the pieces are all pieces that exist. Or we're going to imagine Adam Shirosha Bashamay Raghuvar. Imagine a person whose head's in the clouds and feet are on the ground. Again, we use that as a meta, as an expression, head in the clouds. But say literally, your head's in the sky and feet on the ground. That's impossible. I couldn't have seen that. Chaya Balas Elefe Nine, an animal with 1,000 eyes. Al Derech Mash. Just as examples. Also, there are also other fantastic, impossible things. That'll be the product of putting all the pieces together will be something fantastic. And he says that's why there were philosophers who got very upset about how you are remembering things, I'm imagining things, how can I imagine something that doesn't exist? He says, you understand. No, imagination is always built out of memories, but there are these elements, I compound them together in fantastic ways. Yes. Yes.
What was that?
So sounds like a Gedanke experiment. A thought experiment. Their 20th century modern physics.
A dream?
Yes. He talks about dreams as well. That's right. He says, there was a group of philosophers, one of these sort of streams of philosophy that box themselves into a corner by making too many assumptions of what seemed logical, but then you put them all together, you end up with these absurd conclusions. They imagine anything you could imagine must be possible, because otherwise how could you imagine it? Is it? No. That's actually not the case. Descartes probably more interested in the later Chalakim. So far we've covered three. We've spoken about the Chelek Hazan, the Chelek HaMadam, the Chelek HaMargash, the Chelek HaMadam. So basic life functions, and he spoke about sensory information. And then the Rambam sees imagination and memory as blended in the third. Imagination is built on memory, and memory is built on sensory input. Now, that's why this sort of level three flows from level two, because the memory is what you need for sensory input to be more than ephemeral, for it to last beyond what you're actually seeing, feeling, touching. You need memory, and once you have memory, so then memory, imagination is a sort of an aspect of memory. You have the pieces, and you can put them together in real or fantastic ways. There are two more halakhim coming up, which we will discuss mitzvah next time, the chelek ha-mis'orer and the chelek ha-sichli, which is emotion and rationality. And once we see all that, we can begin to put the pieces together. We'll discuss perhaps also next time if Shelah points out there's a sixth piece that is missing, and whither has it gone. So we will continue Perek Rishon mitzvah next time.
We're talking here about the...